Hi, good morning. Welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my great privilege to serve this warm and welcoming congregation. If you are new and have just found us for the first time or have found us for several times and would like more information about our community and how to come to coffee hour, you can just click on, or you can just write our administrator, Pat Lycan, and her email is on the screen, and you can also go to our website and get more information. For everyone else, please come to coffee hour. It's a good time to talk about what's happening in our community. We do joys and sorrows. We talk about the service. We break out into small breakout rooms so you can talk to old friends and new and catch up on what's going on. I want to welcome you into our service this morning with these words from Erica Hewlett, who based them on a poem of Mary Oliver's. As we enter into worship, put away the pressures of the world that asks us to perform, to put on brave fronts. Silence those voices that ask you to be perfect. This is a community of compassion and welcoming. You do not have to do anything to earn the love of this community. You do not have to be braver. You do not have to be smarter, stronger, better than you are in this moment of belonging here with us. You truly only have to bring the gift of your body, no matter how able, your seeking mind, no matter how busy, your animal heart, no matter how broken. Bring all that you are and all that you love during this time together. Our chalice lighting is from the Eric Walker Wickstrom. Here today, in this place, with these people, may we listen so that we can hear. May we hear so that we can feel. May we feel so that we can know, and may we know so that we can change ourselves and this world. May this chalice we light our way. Henry David Thoreau, a Unitarian who lived about 150 years ago, sat in a chair outside his very small home on the shores of Walden Pond. He just sat and he listened. He listened for the splash of a fish in the water. He listened for the wind in the trees, ruffling the trees above him. He listened for the sound of a bird feather flapping in the air. It was a long time ago. And there was no televisions, there was no iPad to distract him, there was no cars on the freeway. It was very quiet. And he had come away from the town where he lived to build this house on Walden Pond simply so he could listen. And as he listened, he thought about the story of Elijah. Elijah was a biblical prophet who had been running for some time and found himself hidden in a cave. And Elijah had had a long relationship with God, and he was waiting for God to speak to him again and tell him what to do. And there a great storm came, and Elijah expected to hear God in the storm. But when the storm came, God did not speak. And then there was an earthquake, and Elijah expected to hear God speak in the earthquake. But there was no God. And then the fire came down out of the hills and came rushing across the plain, and it crackled and spit. but God's voice was not in the fire. Finally, it was very quiet and it was very still. And Elijah heard a small, almost silent voice whisper to him. And that was the voice of God. It's a thorough thought of that story as he sat there on the edge of Walden Pond, listening for the scurry of mice up the trees, listening for just the blades of grass rustling against each other. He listened, and he thought of Elijah, and he thought of the still, small, whispering voice of God. Our prayer today is the Lord's Prayer, as printed in the New Zealand Prayer Book. Eternal Spirit, Earth Maker, Pain Bearer, Life Giver, Source of all that is and that shall be, Father and Mother of us all, loving God in whom is heaven, the hallowing of your name echo through the universe. The way of your justice be followed by the peoples of the world. Your heavenly will be done by all created beings. Your commonwealth of peace and freedom sustain our hope and come on earth. With the bread we need for today, feed us. In the hurts we absorb from one another, forgive us. In times of temptation and testing, strengthen us. From trials too great to endure, spare us. From the grip of all that is evil, free us. For you reign in the glory of the power that is love, now and forever. Amen.
In the hours before the birds stream airborne, with chiming voice, a silent breath rests in the pines and upholds the surface of the lake, as if it were a fragile bubble in the very hand of God. And I think, this is how we are called, to cup our hands and hold this peace, even when the sirens begin, even when sorrow cries out, old and gnarled, even when the worlds grow fangs and rend. Cupped hands, gently open, supporting peace like the golden hollow of a singing bowl, like the towering rim of mountains, cradling this slumbering and mist-draped valley. Kimberly Beyer Nelson.
One of the many challenging things about being a Unitarian Universalist minister is talking about the sacred, the holy, the divine, the spiritual, and God. Many lean into such discussions, wanting more about these deeply resonant, meaningful moments and experiences in their lives. Others just push away, irritated, and sometimes angry at such conversations, finding them either meaningless or worried that they will lead quickly to the constrictive theologies of faiths that have defined God and claim to know what he, and it's always a he in these cases, wants us to behave. Unitarian Universalists often talk about the Unitarian Universalist principles and how the values expressed in those principles are our own. But we speak much less often about the sources of our faith, which are always printed after the principles and are somehow considered secondary. For me, though, they almost seem more important because they remind us of all the ways you choose to come to wisdom as we traverse our lives. Our sources are very wide and inclusive, including the words of prophetic people, the findings of science, and the teachings of world religions. Our first source, though, is the direct experience of the transcending, mystery, and wonder, affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. This experience of transcending mystery and wonder is absolutely foundational to our faith. We are descendants from the Puritans, who believed that they were the saints, the few chosen by God in the Calvinist faith for salvation. They knew this to be true because of their direct, personal experiences of God. They believed that these experiences meant that they were saved, and that it was possible for them to work together directly in religious community to understand what God wanted from them and their lives. They decided they did not need a hierarchy of men telling them the right and wrong ways to act and to believe. The Transcendentalists of New England, who were nearly all Unitarians, and who we know best through the works of Ralph Waldo Emerson and Henry David Thoreau, expanded on this idea. They believed that any person has the capacity to experience God directly, not just the few chosen like the Puritans had believed. They sort of expanded and were more inclusive. And more importantly, they believed that people could have these transcendent experiences of God without a church at all, and that these happened frequently in nature. The experience of this transcending mystery and wonder is called by so many names. The Puritans and Transcendentalists called it God. Sometimes we still call it God, but also Goddess, Spirit of Love, Wilderness, Holy, Divine, Sacred, Spiritual. Cultures and religions also use different stories and metaphors for this transcending mystery and wonder, in order to make it more accessible or to use it in service of the culture's values or power structure. Western secular culture has typically diminished these experiences. They have been relegated to the private sphere, to moments that people have in religion, or to the vague idea of spiritual but not religious. So, for example, consider those moments when things come together in entirely unpredictable, but rather wonderful ways. In secular culture, we often call them coincidences, while someone who is spiritual but not religious might call them synchronicities, and a believer in God might call them God moments. When I was preparing to go to seminary in Chicago, the person who had been best man at my wedding sent us an invitation to this huge party in Seattle for his graduation. And my husband and I lived in Spokane, about 5 hours away, and we were suddenly overcome with this great desire to go. And it was the craziest idea. We had 3 children under the age of 10. We had virtually no money. We had nowhere to stay. We hadn't seen this friend or spoken to him even in several years. And we wouldn't know many of the people at this party. It would not be a child-friendly party. Still, for some reason, we just really wanted to go to this party. So we did. We overcame all those difficulties, and we went. And then at the party, in those few moments, you know, in one of those big swirling parties that I saw my friend, actually, I told him that I was going to go to seminary in Chicago, where he had grown up. And I found out in that conversation that he grew up not just in Chicago, but in Hyde Park, just a few blocks from the seminary. And he said, well, you should meet my mom. You could probably stay with her. So he guided me over to this very quiet woman in the corner who talked to me for about 3 minutes and offered me to stay with her for free in her apartment. And I stayed there for 8 years, every January for 8 years. And got to know this really marvelous woman who was almost as foundational to me as my seminary education. So was that coincidence? Was it synchronicity? Was it a God moment? I would have said coincidence, perhaps then. Maybe our unconscious minds really remembered that our friend lived in Hyde Park and not just in Chicago, and that was near the seminary. But over on my path to seminary and ordination, such things kept happening. It really felt to me like there was this force that kept pushing me, opening me up an unexpected and unpredictable path that made ordination possible. At some point along that long 8-10 year journey, I just stopped calling it coincidence. I can't embrace a theology or explanation of a personal God that looks out for each of us. There's just way too much evil and pain in the world to make anything like that palatable to me. And I don't actually have any theological explanation for what happened. But my journey to ministry was filled with experiences of transcending mystery and wonder that made the whole thing possible. I did feel like I was supported by this universal generosity and grace that I now feel obligated to. I felt that something I could not understand really wanted me to go to seminary and become a minister. And now I feel I've been asked to offer that same generosity and grace to others. I believe experiences of the holy and the sacred, or whatever our term for them is, nourish and sustain us. They open us up to the true interconnected quality of existence. They help us be more loving people, committed to justice and gratitude for this life. These are moments that happen. They are not intellectual constructs. They are not theology. Most of us have felt love, either pouring from us toward someone or coming to us from someone. We may use words to describe what that feels like. We may have explanations for how that works. And it turns out, though, that it's really difficult to describe accurately that experience. The experience of transcending mystery and wonder is the same. It happens. We may use words to describe what it feels like. We may have explanations for how that happened. And it turns out that it's really difficult to describe accurately or to name. This is the position of many theologians, or some theologians, I don't know about many. They argue that God is not a thing that can be described and labeled with particular characteristics. They argue that the entity we call God is an experience we sometimes have of something beyond us. Rich, humming with meaning, intensity, mystery, and wonder that is deeply renewing. Some of us have had such experiences, and we would never call them God, but it doesn't really matter at all what we call them. Language for such moments is impossible, and often only poets can get anywhere close. I can feel it some in this poem, At Blackwater Pond by Mary Oliver. At Blackwater Pond, the tossed waters have settled after a night of rain. I dip my cupped hands, I drink a long time. It tastes like stone, leaves, fire. It falls cold into my body, waking the bones. I hear them deep inside me, whispering, "Oh, what is that beautiful thing that just happened?" Her bones wake. What other language might a non-poet use to describe that exact moment? Spiritual? Holy? Wendell Berry's poem, The Peace of Wildlings, also shares this renewing presence. When despair grows in me and I wake in the middle of the night, at least the sound in fear of what my life and my children's life might be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting for their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. Again, what language might a non-poet use to describe such a moment, such a blessing of grace? Perhaps goddess or god, perhaps divine, perhaps the presence of nature. However we speak of these moments, we are renewed. Our theme this month is deep listening. Listening is a good metaphor for the way we can lean into and open ourselves up to such moments. We spoke last week of the way deep listening to others requires us to pay attention and set aside our chattering minds and our stories about how the world works. This is the same thing we need to do when we're listening for transcending moments in our lives. We have to pay attention to both the world and the small, still voice. We need to be present. In this morning's story, Henry David Thoreau attended to the world. He listened. And so did the prophet Elijah. And in the end, they both heard a still voice, a voice that nourished and renewed them. This experience of the transcending wonder and awe that nourishes and renews is our birthright as people. And it is one of the sources of our faith. We would do well to listen for it. It may be listening with your ears or seeing with your eyes, but this listening is more for a feeling or a sense. Rumi said, "The soul has been given its own ears to hear things the mind does not understand." This is soul listening, or listening with our hearts, or with our whole beings. So how do we do this? Fortunately, religious and spiritual traditions over millennia have been trying to figure that out and give us some guidance. And the guidance has much in common. Mostly, you just have to learn to be still and pay attention without the cluttering stories and diversions of our minds, as Thoreau listened, as Elijah listened. Writer Mark Nepo describes it this way: "Still yourself and listen, and soon in time the mystery will begin to speak to you through its thousand disguises as life on earth." Many traditions teach that a practice such as meditation is needed to help us strengthen the ability to pay attention in this way. Meditation is a practice that helps us learn to pay attention. Other traditions teach that prayer is a good way to learn to do this listening. Prayer is the cry of our heart and soul into the mysterious unknown and the listening for what happens next. Prayer is an age-old method for listening for the still, small voice. Prayer prepares us for the unknown. Another long time method for learning to be in these moments is reading scripture in whatever tradition the person is in. For Unitarian Universalists, that's really often reading poetry. And particularly, I would like to say the poetry of Mary Oliver and Wendell Berry. But any kind of poetry or reading that helps us focus on what's transcendent, helps us then have that in our own lives. Whatever you do, whatever your way of listening, what is most important is to just find some time to still the busyness of one's mind and all the distractions, the television, our phones, the people near us, the sounds on the street. There's so many distractions in modern life. And we just have to step back from those distractions and listen. We need to find a stillness to hear that transcending mystery and wonder through its 1,000 disguises on earth. Because that is where it always is. It's here, on this earth, with us, in our lives. And we all so much need this renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces that create and uphold life. We need this. We need this now more than ever in these uncertain and challenging times. It's what holds and grounds us, so we can find our way into our new world. There's an old story about two friends, and they're walking down a busy street in Chicago downtown. It's during rush hour. Cars are whishing by. Horns are honking. The sidewalks are crowded. People are talking to each other, looking at their phones, talking on their phones. Then one of the friends turns to the other and says, "Did you hear that? It's a cricket." Then he waited for the cars to clear long enough to run to the median in the middle of the road, and he reached down and picked something up. And he came back and showed his friend the little cricket. He was so delighted to have saved it. "Wow," his friend says, "how did you hear that cricket in all this noise?" "Oh, I was raised to hear crickets," his friend said. "We were always hunting them when I was a child." We all hear what we're taught to listen for. "Here, I'll show you something." The friend reached into his pocket and pulled out some coins, some nickels and quarters and dimes, and he dropped them on the sidewalk. Suddenly, all these rushing people stopped and turned around looking, because they had heard the sound of the coins. They were looking for the fallen money. We hear and notice what we listen for. So let us all listen for the healing voice of the holy, the small, still voice that can ground us, guide us, soothe us, and nourish us. Amen. Our benediction is from the Reverend Sarah York. We receive fragments of holiness, glimpses of eternity, brief moments of insight. Let's gather them up for the precious gifts that they are, and renewed by their grace, move boldly into the unknown. We will now extinguish our chalice until we meet again. But remember, it does not go out. As long as we carry its flame in our hearts, the light of Unitarian Universalism warms and brightens the world.